Today's daf in Masechet Beitzah, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Ches, and we got up to the discussion about Brera yesterday, and we said that we paskin that there's a nafkamina, like Rav Hoshaya said, between a Deoraita and a Drabonan, that in a Deoraita we don't hold a Brera, and in a Drabonan we are semech on Brera. Dorash Mar Zutra, Lochak Rav Hoshaya, that was the last thing that we said yesterday. So we're seven lines down here. Omar Shmuel, Shor Shel Patam. So getting back to the Sugi in the Mishnah. The Sugi in the Mishnah was the question of whether objects or animals take on the tchum of the owner. And at what point, if somebody lends something to someone, when does that become the tchum of the person who borrowed? So the Mishnah had said, if he borrowed it before Yontev, then it goes according to the tchum of the person who borrowed. If not, it goes according to the tchum of the person who lent it. Omar Shmuel, nonetheless, a shor shel patam, areyu karagle kol adam. So a patam is a professional who basically fattens animals and raises them, and people come from all over to be able to bid on those animals because they're very high quality. And because of that, says Shmuel, that the das of the patam is that whoever it is that is going to be ready to take it on Yontov, he's going to give it to. So since he had in mind to give it to that person, so memela, it does not take on the tchum of the patam, it takes on the tchum of the individual that actually ends up taking it. Now, this is a big problem, because yesterday, remember, we learned that Shmuel doesn't hold a Brera. So how in the world is it going to take on the tchum of the individual who buys it if we have no idea at the time who that would be, since according to Shmuel, there is no Brera that we can be semech on? So probably, I mean, there are Rishonim Utaina that Shmuel says Brera in cases where it's 100% meant to be in a different place than it is now. This is a very difficult approach. The partial approach, according to most of the Rishonim, is that the Rabbanan, remember, were being machmer over here with the dinim of tchumim, because these tchumim are the Rabbanan. So because of that, since we know that there's a halacha, that heftzei hefker, if you take something that was hefker, you can be zocher in it, and it takes on your tchum. So if that's the case, then the din would be, even though this is a machlokes, but according to the Chachamim, Cheftzei Hefker become yours and take on your tchum immediately when you pick them up on Shabbos. So if that's the case, they weren't machmer over here, and they considered that the patam, who wants to get rid of this animal, and b'shum ofen, he doesn't want to keep it. The whole point of his fattening of it is to make sure that somebody will be able to use it for yontem and take it off his hands. So because of that, they gave it the din of Cheftzei Hefker. Cheftzei Hefker, they have the tchum of the individual who takes it. That's a very reasonable approach, in which case there's no problem of dealing with why Shmuel here is not contradicting his own sheet of yesterday, that there is no bringer. Okay, now let's take a look at the next piece of the Mishnah. The next piece of the Mishnah says, somebody borrows something from a friend on Erev Yontev, that it gets the din of the person who borrowed it. So it goes according to the Shoel. It's like, well, obviously. I mean, I don't understand. If it wasn't in the other guy's Mokum Shvis, it wasn't his, so how could it be kind of his Mokum Shvis? That's not a din in the technical ownership as opposed to the Shoel. The Shoel is basically the person in whose Rishus it is. And therefore, it's obviously going to be in his Rishus of his Tchum for Shabbos. So what is the need for the Mishnah to tell us this? Ah, says the Gemara. The Chiddush is that lo tzricha shelo misarolo ela b'yamtev. The point over here is he made a deal with him. He told him, I'm going to be lending this to you. So come over, pick it up tomorrow morning. The guy comes over only in the morning when it's yamtev. It never was in his Rishus. Nonetheless, the fact that they made the deal before Yontev means that even though it wasn't physically in his Rishos, it's considered to be Kena, his Mokum Shvisen. That's a big Kiddush, because Mao, the Temelab Rishutei Ukme, you might have said that, look, I mean, the bottom line is, it wasn't in his actual Rishos, it was technically he had a right to take it. So maybe that was not considered to be kena, the lokum shmisa of the shoel, from Ashmalan. Therefore, tells us, afal pikein, since it was given to him to take on yontif, it's as if it was kena as lokum shmisa. Now, the problem is, of course, this makes the next case a little bit more difficult, but we'll see that in a moment. Now, this halacha, that just the commitment to lend something is sufficient to give the din of the mokum shvisa to that borrower, is a riot to Rabbi Yochanan, because we didn't have any other way of understanding the Mishnah. And this means that it must be that Rabbi Yochanan was correct. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, this is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. Somebody borrows something, even though he didn't get it, it has the din of the shoel. And now it turns out that that's basically the only way to really fully understand our mission.
Rabbi, I'm sorry to pull Rabbi back. Could Rabbi spend a moment? Why is the shor shel ro'eh harel karagli osayir? How does that work?
Thank you for pulling me back, because I forgot to even read that. I just read the shor shel patan. I'm glad somebody pulled me back. Right, so we left out the shor shel ro'eh harel karagli osayir. Thank you. So the issue of the shor shel ro'eh is that a ro'eh also will sell the animals that he has in his rishus. Very often that's part of what he does. He will be a service person for taking other people's animals as he takes his own. And they pay him for that service. But he does have his own animals. And those animals he is interested in selling for a profit. But he only sells to locals, because he's not somebody who's a patam who's famous for making delicious animals. So obviously his mind was limited to the people that he would be able to sell to locally. In which case, the vision that he had of the tchum, of where these animals will be, is for the local community. Therefore, anyone in the local community who buys it, it has the tchum of the local community, which means it doesn't have the tchum of the individual. In other words, let's say that particular individual, he made an eruv to one side or another. He's limited by the overall tchum of the community, because that was basically where the Roya's intention was, that it should be for Yantiv, as opposed to the Patam, where people come from all over to be able to get the very special animals. Okay, getting back now to the next case. So the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was that if you borrow on Yantiv, so then you have the same tchum of the lender. I mean, well, obviously, I mean, because now we're really limited, since we said that the chiddush of the other case, that it gets the din of the shoel, is talking about where it wasn't even in the rishus of the shoel, and it was just a commitment. So, I mean, if there wasn't even a commitment, because that has to be the next case, there wasn't even a commitment, so I don't understand, what am I talking about? Of course, it goes according to where you're kind of Malkum Shvisa. That's a Dover Borer. Everything about Tchumim goes according to the Malkum Shvisa's Kinyan, including at the moment that the Erev would be Chal, that's your Malkum Shvisa. So what kind of Chiddush is this? Ah, I'll tell you what it's talking about. It's talking about that you are a big sucker. And there's this guy who comes every single Erev Shabbos, and he always asks you, can I borrow X? Can I borrow Y? Okay, so you're always lending him things, and you're waiting for this guy to show up. Anyway, he doesn't show up today, right? So now the question is, are you convinced that he's going to be showing up tomorrow, so that basically you still have a commitment to give it to him? Or do you figure there's a sucker born every day? The same way he found me, maybe now he's discovered somebody else because he hasn't shown up. So maybe there was another sucker. So that's the chiddush. You might think that, okay, so the lender is for sure committed to giving it to this guy, because he knows he's going to be coming tomorrow, right? Kamashma, and therefore, Tainas, the Mishnah, that the lender still has hope. Meimar Omar, he says to himself, a sucker is born every minute. Dilma Mishkach Inishachrina, maybe he'll find another sucker. Yasemishomine, and he'll go and borrow from him this week. And this may be an amazing new beginning for me. Kamashma, that's exactly what it is that he always hopes because hope is always renewed. It never happened yet, but it may be happening today. The same thing is true of a woman who borrowed, which said over there, even if she borrowed water or salt, that the bread that she makes with that water and salt, even though it's 99%, it's her own flour, but afal pikein, it is limited to the common tchum. So it has to be a joint tchum. Otherwise, you're taking it out of the other person. You're taking the water of the neighbor out of the area of the neighbor. Now, when Rav Abba was about to go from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, remember that the people in Eretz Yisrael did not think very highly of the Bavloi Tipshoi. They're pretty stupid people. They didn't like the way they learned. They didn't like their Sforas. Since they live in an Arad HaShucha, they live in the Death Valley, so they say things that are HaShucha, as the Gemara says. So when Rav Abba was going up, he davened, Yehei Ravad Ema Milta Ditkabel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help me, that I should be able, when I get there, to say something that people will find intelligent, and because of that, I won't end up being looked down on over there. Anyway, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he meets up with Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, and Rabbi Zeira. Some say that, no, it was Rabbi Abu and Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi and Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka that were sitting around. Now, I want you to know that the Ritva says on this, that this is a sugya that's almost impossible to understand. Uboyit Silusa. You have to daven to be able to understand the sugya. So he did not fully understand the sugya. And we'll see that there are a lot of very strange issues that are going on here. And therefore, I'll raise the issues. We'll take a look at the inyanim, but there is no definitive, clear understanding of what was happening over here. So anyway, he finds Rabbi Avor, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, we're learning this Mishnah. The Yadvei, the Kamre, and by the way, it's not only the Ritva, a number of the Rishonim point this out, the Shita also, it's one of the most difficult sugyas. So the question that they were asking was, why does the Mishnah say that we should actually limit the movement of the bread that is baked to the common tchum? Why? Why isn't the water and the salt bottle to the flour? So let it be bottle to gabi yahisa. And it shouldn't be choshev enough to actually make us be makbid on the tchum of the neighbor. Amalahu Rabbi Abba. So here was Rabbi Abba's big chance to make his splash, right? He's coming up, the big Talmid Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael have got a question, he has a brilliant answer, and he is going to finally make this impression. So Amalo Rav Abba, Rav says to him, oh, for God's sake, Hare Shinita Revlo Kaf Chitin, Asarak Abin Chitin Shel Chavero. I don't understand. If a guy has one kav of wheat, right? And now it falls into somebody else's 10 kav. So now, what do you think happens? Do I end up losing my single kav because it's bottled to the other guy's wheat? And now the other guy can sit around and dance a jig and say, wow, look at this. My 10 kav suddenly became 11 kav. May this happen every day. And now nobody has to pay me. Nothing. Everything's fine. I lost it, and the other guy's dancing around, and he's happy. This makes sense to you. How in the world are you comparing the inyanim of bittul of to mammon? I mean, the guy over here is going to lose his money. Does it not still belong to the neighbor? Does the water not belong to the neighbor? Does the salt not belong to the neighbor? So what? It's going to all of a sudden disappear because it's not chashev. I mean, that's crazy. So, of course, the Mishnah says you have to be makbid on the tchum of the neighbor. A brilliant and very straightforward analysis, which caused a gale of laughter. So, instead of Rav Abba's tefillah, that may I say something that will be mekubal, he's sitting over there, booshed out. Everybody is laughing their heads off. This guy is an idiot. Now, there does not seem to be anything idiotic in what he's saying at all, right? But everybody's laughing. So Rav Abba says to them, Hey, I mean, come on. Gultaiko shakli. I mean, I understand. Did I take off your beautiful shirt? Now, this is very strange, and I believe that here lies the key, but for some reason nobody talks about it. The gultaiku that he's referring to is a beged that is a very beautiful beged, but it's not usually visible, because usually you're wearing your outside beged, your talis, and here he insists, as Rashi says, what, did I remove your jacket? That you're laughing at me? That's, what in the world? So they burst out laughing even worse. So Hodarachiku Elayah, when he said that. And nobody's masbir this piece. It's a very strange piece. Okay, so first of all, it seems to me that from the second piece, there is an indication of what it is that they found so funny about him. And apparently what they found funny about him was that he came up from Bovel in classic Bovel fashion. Remember, the Gemara says that the reason Tamiri Chachomim in Bovel are always fighting. Why are they dressed so fancy? They're dressed fancy. Remember, that's what the Gemara said. How come they're so mitzuyanim? She'ina b'nei Tera. They're not really b'nei Tera. The whole thing is just, you know, okay, I can show off what I understand, you can show off what you understand. When he said that second Nekuda, what does he mean, Bichlal? What, did I take off your beautiful undershirts? I mean, what kind of weird thing is that? So the pashtus is that what it means is that he indeed felt that he did take off their talus. He just didn't take off their jacket. In other words, the entire thing was competitive, and this is what they sensed from him in the first place. I mean, do you really think we're idiots? Let's analyze between us now. What is the issue? I mean, obviously, we don't really believe that they held that the person's bilis became bottle and you wouldn't have to return the water to the neighbor because of the fact that it fell into the neighbor's dome. I mean, that's crazy, right? So the point over here is that there are two different elements. And this is what's going to come out in the whole conversation, which makes the sugya very difficult. There are two different elements here. There's the element of mamay, which, of course, is not bottle. One person's money is not bottle and another person's money. If my wallet falls into your wallet, so therefore you keep my wallet, I mean, it makes no sense. But the question over here is, what is the primary issue? Do we first make the determination of the ownership, and then we say, okay, so because of that, we're going to have to be makbid on the tchum? Or do we separate the issues, and we say, look, where there is something there that is gerim and iser tchumim, it should be bottle, because that's Isser. Obviously, the person is going to lose their ownership, but nonetheless, the Isser component of it, which is the element of the Isser Tchumim, is bottle because it's not noticeable. That's a perfectly logical thing to think, right? So because of that, when they were asking the question, why wouldn't it be bottle? And Rav Abba responds to them with this absurdity, which was obviously taken into consideration by them in the first place, that of course we're not saying that the ownership should be bottle. We're saying that this is a function of Isser and not of Mamay. And then he comes back because of his smart alecky way of saying it. Well, I mean, what do you think, that it's going to be bottle? I mean, this is exactly the typical one-upmanship tone, you know? What do you mean? And if I own something, so it's going to fall into the... Let me just close the window.
No, Willie, this issue of dough really got a rise out of everybody.
I think you're just bloating the issue.
Because no matter how you learn, you're going to have to explain why it wasn't just that the tefillah wasn't answered of Rav Abba, but that the exact opposite of his tefillah happened, right? That's weird. I mean, there's obviously halo davaro. The Achronim speak about this. I mean, many of the Achronim say, we try to analyze why was it that his tefillah wasn't answered and whatever. I say, why did he want to make an impression and why was he mispalo? That's a problem because Rashi says he was mispalo only that he shouldn't be embarrassed. So there's nothing, we say that tefillah when we talk about the tefillah in Beis HaMedrash, we say a tefillah, we shouldn't be embarrassed. So, I mean, that part doesn't seem to be, at least the way Rashi is learning. Now, there seems to be a different issue over here. So, therefore, I have heard this tone innumerable times. So somebody will ask a question the way Rabbi Yochanan was asking the question. So that why would the water not be bottle? And then somebody who says, what do you mean? So the other guy should be happy because he's got the other person's moment, without even taking into consideration what the issue is in the shita that they were saying. Obviously, they weren't talking about moment, right? So then when he was megala, that's the pshat in the second piece. Is why is that part important that they start laughing at him again because he makes the comment about taking their undershirts, right? That's the point. So what did I do? You still got your pretty jacket under your talus, you know? Maybe I showed you up a little bit, but I mean, it's outrageous. So for sure they burst out laughing. Okay. Anyway, kach nirali. But now we'll take a look at why the sugya is so problematic. So why did they laugh at him? So Amar Rav Hoshaya, Shapir Avadachi Kuala, they actually did the right thing in laughing at him. It was ridiculous what he said. Why was it ridiculous? Because why did he say if one kav of chitim falls into 10 kav of the other guy's chitim? He shouldn't have said chitim. He should have said se'irim. Because remember, there's a big machlokas about min b'mino batal or not. And by saying chitim, why didn't he say chitim in se'orim? Chitim in se'orim, everybody would be made is batal, because it's min b'she'eno mino. Instead, he took a case of min b'mino. Now, min b'mino is a machlokas, of course, between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, about whether it's batal or not. So, ma'ishna chitim in se'orim, the loka amalai, why didn't he want to say the case of chitim in se'orim? Because that would have been min b'she'eno mino. And min b'she'eno mino is actually going to be batal. So, therefore, apparently, what Rabbi Abba would have done, this is the way most learn it, which is problematic, and that Rabbi Abba would agree that in a min b'she'eno mino, it would have been batal even in terms of the moment, and he would have lost his money. But even if that's true, nihidel Rabbi Yehuda lo batil, the Rabbanan bifto batil. It's all very nice to say that the way that he said it over here about min b'mino is not batil alibi Rabbi Yehuda, but it would be batil alibi the Rabbanan. So what is he trying to prove that they're wrong because of Rabbi Yehuda? That's weird. Omar le Rav Safra. Oh, come on, Meisha. Now, normally Rashi says that Meisha means that when you speak to a Gadol Bedor, you call him Meisha, because he said Meisha was Gadol Bedore. Here, Rashi says that Meisha over here means that he was Nishba with the covet of Meisha, with the Chashivas of Meisha. Now, it could be he held that Rav Safra would not have called Rav Hoshaya Meisha in terms of the others, so I don't know why Rashi changes it here. But in any event, he says to him, what, this is an explanation of why they had a right to laugh at him. Lo shmielu hadi om rebchia katusva mishmei derav haborer tzorot migorno shachaveru chayev l'shalem lo dmei chitin. Listen, guy wants to do a favor, yeah? So he goes next door, the guy's got himself a silo full of grain, and he goes and he cleans it out and he collects all of the little stones out of it, and now he's got 2 kilos worth of stones that he's taken out of this guy's 20 kilos of wheat. The halacha is that he has to pay him for ruining his wheat. 2 kilos worth of wheat. Why? Because normally that amount of stone is allowed to be in the wheat. And the buyer would have paid for the weight of that wheat, understanding that there's that percentage of tzorot in it. Since he took out the tzorot, and now the person who's buying it is going to be paying that amount of money for pure wheat, this guy just lost 2 kilograms out of his wheat, right? So what do you see from there? Alma, kilo chasre, right? We see that even though the stones aren't worth anything, but lomaisa, there's now less wheat for him to sell. So here too, it's also, it's the same thing. Achanami kilo chasre. Basically, if we're going to cancel, again, those who learned that the question over here is the cancellation of ownership. So even though what we're doing over here is you're saying things that are not worth very much, nonetheless, they're considered to be yours. So I think we're mafkir, those troros. So because of that, the same thing is true over here. I gave you the water and the salt with the understanding that you borrowed it from me, or that we made it together. Omale Abaye. Said Abaye to Rav Safra, that's not a good comparison at all. Excuse me? Lo shani lo lomar b'momot sheyesh lo tovim, b'momot sheyin lo tovim. The water in the dough, the guy does not expect to get that water back. The salt in the dough, certainly not today. I mean, he gave it to she, the neighbor, gave it to her to be keeping today. So in that case, if I don't have any interest in claiming it back, I'm not going to sue you for it today. So then why wouldn't it be batel? Because right now there's nobody who cares about it. Therefore, Tanya's Rabbayat Rav Safra, what you're saying to Rav Hoshaya is not so. Says Rav Safra, I'll prove to you that that is not true. Now, the problem you'll note already is that what we seem to have done is we took something that was very clearly on the surface, not about the question of whether ownership is really batel. We took a question about whether we should look at tchumim in terms of ownership or in terms of mammon, and turned it into an actual discussion in which the threesome, whoever the three were in Eretz Yisrael, were claiming that ownership was batel, and that the proof of the pudding is that Rabbi Abba himself only brought the case of min b'mino. Aha, why did he do that? Because he was trying to fool us, because we would realize that it's only because of min b'mino that it's not batel. But had it been min b'sheinu mino, the ownership would have been batel. Oh, that's ridiculous. Obviously, that was not the reason that he brought this case. He was not comparing it to a standard case of bittel. And the whole question is very strange. Why are we comparing it really to bittel issur? Never, nobody has any kind of belief in the bittel of moment, the bittel issur. And certainly the reason that Rav Abba brought the case of chita and chita had nothing to do with min b'mino and min b'sheinu mino. He brought the case of chita b'chita because of the fact that over here it is a nicker. The whole thing is very strange. Okay, so all of the Rishonim say it's not clear on what level this conversation is taking place, whether it's simply taking place as a dugma somehow to prove that they shouldn't have been laughed at because it wasn't totally crazy, and the suggestion over here is he was being laughed at because of the fact that he chose the wrong words because he opened himself up to this taina. You're such an idiot. I mean, look, if you're going to be such a smart aleck, but you're telling us that we're not bright enough to understand the difference between Mammon and Isser, and you don't think that we decided that Tchumim or Aser, so at least for heaven's sakes, use the right words. What are you bringing us a case where there anyway wouldn't be Bittel according to all the sheets? You should have brought a case where there Vada is Bittel. So look at you. You can't even bring yourself a good dugma. That seems to be more what the Gemara was trying to say. So again, it depends on how you learn the sugya. There's no clear-cut, accepted way of understanding it, but you get the general idea. Apparently, all of this is a discussion about the way things should have been set. That's the way I understand it. And it's
the fact that he's talking about the clothing means, oh, it's personal, one up, Mishir, there's exactly. Covenant involved, instead of seeking the truth.
Right, because why else? Then they started laughing at him. Because he uncovered his internal Chachmei Bavel approach. And that was exactly the problem. Instead of being mispalel that he should say something brilliant, he should have been mispalel that he should say something that is not tainted by the approach of Chachmei Bavel. Right? I think the Chassam Sefer says actually something like that. That he doesn't relate it to the clothing, but he says that the Surah the Tefillah wasn't correct. Okay, but in any event, that would mean that the whole conversation here is not seriously about whether Momo would be batel. It's the question of how suitable the various dugma'ot are, and therefore we shouldn't look at it as trying to actually determine whether or not there's a bittel of Momo. Okay. Anyway, Tainas Rav Safra to Abaye. Listen here. The fact that Momo that has Tovim, you're claiming should be different than Momo she'ein lo Tovim, in terms of bittel, does not make sense. Because according to what you said, what it was that Rav Chisda said, remember, I'm so sorry that it's so complicated, but this is a different issue that relates to what we just spoke about, okay? Rav Yehuda and the Rabbanan argue about whether min b'mino is batel or not, right? So according to Rav Yehuda, the halacha is that min b'mino is not batel, ever. So now, Rav Chisda wanted to explain what Rav Yehuda means by min b'mino and min b'she'eno mino. Min b'mino, Tainas Rav Chisda, goes according to the definition of what the status is of the mevatel. So in other words, the thing that is the most choshev, that's the mevatel, what is its status? Can the status of the mevatel be similar to the thing that is batel or not? That's what defines it. So what does that mean? Either it's the same or it's not. No. Because here we have a fascinating case. The case is that we have nevela meat, which is metame, and we have kosher meat, shchuta meat, which is not metame. So Rav Chisda said, if you have nevela meat that is falls into shchuta meat, then the nevela becomes bottle in the shchuta, and therefore we don't have to worry about the tuma. Why? Lefishi I efshar l'shchuta sheteaseh nevela. So if the shchuta would be any change in the shchuta, could a shchuta ever become a nevela to be metame with any stretch of the imagination? No. So therefore, it would be basically min b'she'eino mino. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, even though it looks the same, tastes the same, and so on, but it has a completely different status. So therefore, it's min b'she'eino mino, lahalacha. And even Rabbi Yehuda would be maskim that it would be bota. But the other way around, let's imagine a case of shchuta meat that falls into nevela meat. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it's not bota. Why not? Because a nevela, which is over here, the rove, and it's the mevatel, it can become kosher. How can a nevela become kosher? Very simple. Leave it around for 2 days, and it starts to rot. The moment that it's eno roi leger, so it's not roi l'achila any longer, it loses its tuma. So for all intents and purposes, vis-a-vis the issue that we're talking about, is it going to be batami or not, it actually becomes kosher in the sense of not being metame. Therefore, it's min bemino. And if it's min bemino, then it means that the nevela is not going to be bottle in it. You see? Amazing. What's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is that if it were all bottle and the shchuta meat would be bottle in the nevela, so then if somebody touched any of this meat, it would be varai tuma. And if he touched truma, we would burn the truma. But now that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not bottle because it's never the same, because I can't possibly turn the one into the other. I can't turn one into the other, and therefore it's not bottle because min b'mino. So now if I touched one part, I don't know that that part is tame. So it's only a suffix tuma. So if I now go and I touch truma, I will not burn the truma. So it turns out there's very important nafkaminas over here. The bottom line is that basically, we're going to make a nafkamina between what can become the other thing, right? So we go according to the thing. Now, if that's the case, says Rav Safra, do you understand that that's what Rav Chisda said? So the same thing is true over here. Hachanani, what would you tell me? I have a very interesting question for you. Suppose the nevela meat does have an owner, right? So you're going to tell me, the nevela becomes bottle in the shchuta, you said. But how about if it has an owner? So now it can't become bottle. Because you say if something has an owner, there's no din of bittul. What, are you crazy? You actually believe that the dinim of bittul are no longer applicable because this piece has a different owner. Because that's what you're saying, basically. Is that what you believe? The same thing is true over here. What do I care if it has an owner? You're taking for granted that what? Now, again, please recognize that we're talking past each other because we never suggested such a thing. We never suggested that there cannot be bittul because of the fact that there's different owners. What we suggested was that the din of the tchum needs to be defined first by whether the other person's thing is still here and therefore have to be makbid on the tchum, or whether I look at the tchum as pure iser. So this is not really relevant, but we're pretending on every level that the question is whether the metaphor, Baruch Avram, you cannot lose concentration in a sugya like this. whether the metaphor, and the Gemara says, a hand on a forehead is one step towards sleep. That's the Beferish Gemara. I'm not sure whether that is not the same as the hand on the forehead. That's sort of like Barnea's deep concentration look, which is guaranteed to put him to sleep within 30 seconds. Okay. So anyway, so what we're doing over here is brilliant. So we're saying, look, if you honestly think that it's so obvious that the issue of the ownership is going to make the tchum not bottle, and therefore you're thinking that Rabbi Yochanan or whoever the three Talmidei Chachamim, whoever they were, didn't know what they were talking about, so then let me ask you something. And if you've got a nevela and a shkuta that are owned by three different people, so now all the dinim change. Because after all, you can't be mevatel another guy's mammon, so therefore we shouldn't say that there's a bittel at all. Obviously, that's nuts. What does one have to do with the other? Okay, so because of that, I'm dining. You certainly wouldn't have said that. And let me tell you something. Even if you would say it, it wouldn't have anything to do with us, okay? You want to be an auction and claim, yes, yes, it's true. Things that are owned by different people cannot be bought to one another. Excuse me, but Tanya, we have a braita that sort of says, we don't really have the exact braita, but it boils down to Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Chefzei Hefker Konim Shvita. So remember, I told you before that Chefzei Hefker is a machlokas to Chachomim and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Shita is that even something of Hefker is kena its own Mokam Shvisa. So because of that, if you find something that's Hefker, you cannot move it out of the tchum of the place that you found it. So it would be limited to 2,000 amas from that place, even though there's no biling. So you see that by extension, this is a pure reductio ad absurdum, you understand? Because what he's saying is, look, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, even if something doesn't have an owner, it's its own owner, because it gets its own tchum. So then we can never be mevatel anything, because you're being mevatel the ownership of the thing which is Hefker in the other thing, so what's the difference? Okay? So, Ava Pishen Lem Balim, Domim Kemishiesh Lem Balim, so you see that they have enough of a bialis to be kind of tchum, so then you might as well talk about even things that don't have different owners. Okay? So therefore, the whole thing, your whole argument seems to completely break down. Therefore, in the case of the Mishnah, the water and the salt are not going to become bottle. Okay. Now, according to this approach, the Abaya comes back with the Taina that even if we should say the opposite, and of course this is also true, even if we would say exactly the opposite, that they are different bialim, the tchumim would actually become bottle. And it says, you're Mikamidamita Yisurla Mamona, what are you bringing a raya that I have to pay the guy back for the pebbles that I took out of his wheat, which was Rav Safra's original point? Isur is the only thing that's bottle. Mamon is never bottle. So therefore, if Mamon is never bottle, what does that have to do with the issue? Let's agree that of course you'll have to pay back the water and the salt and it never was a problem. But therefore what? Therefore, the tchum should not be a din of Isser. The tchum is still a din of Isser, even though it was dependent on the ownership of the person who had the other tchum. Okay. So basically what the Gemara did is it showed the full scope. And I'm telling you, you don't find a single Rishon that's Masbir the Gemara without saying something is cuckoo. And that's why I'm suggesting that what the Gemara is really doing over here, it's examining in the entire conversation with every Shita, Rav Hoshaya and Rav Safra and Abaye, after having seen the original interaction, all of the elements that needed to be taken into consideration in a serious fashion when they met. These are the things that should have been discussed. Not taking things for granted and making comments about what the halacha would have been. So therefore, everyone focuses on a different issue. First of all, look how you said it. You brought an example of min b'mino. Why did you bring an example of min b'mino? That your whole approach was ridiculous because obviously we understood that we're talking about Isser, we're not talking about Bilas, And therefore, the question would be, would bilus be batel? Is that what you really think we were saying? And so on and so forth. So the levels of the real conversation that should have taken place between Rebbe Abba and the Shloisha Chachamim are examined in the course of the way that the Gemara brings out the issues, plus what was wrong about the way it was formulated in terms of the mishalim that are being brought. We need to see that each one of the dugma cases are irrelevant to the discussion. That's the point. So whether we're talking about the case of the Tzorot, or we're talking about the Nevel of the Shchut, or we're talking about Chefetz Hefker, we're talking about different ownerships, all in all, each and every one of these things is really irrelevant in the end. But the Gemara wants you to understand where the irrelevance comes from and what the real interrelationship actually is between the dinim of bittul, the dinim of ownership, the halachas of iser, what defines min b'mino, what defines min b'she'eino mino, and use the interaction. And if I'm right, then this is a tremendously meaningful Gemara. And I'm telling you, there are those who write about this Gemara that there's no more difficult Gemara in Shas. Mamish, that's the lashon. That this is the most difficult Gemara, doesn't seem to have any way to understand it. So if that's the case, then I'm suggesting that what we're looking at over here is an immensely important sugya. And that what the Gemara is really trying to do is to contrast the way people communicate in Torah with the way people should communicate in Torah. And therefore, what it takes is a case which on the surface seems to be a very simple interaction, which turns out to, for some reason, be insanely humorous. Now, humor is very sophisticated. When you look at something and you don't get the joke, and nobody gets the joke, Rav Shaya doesn't get the joke, Rav Safra doesn't get the joke, Abaya doesn't get the joke, only these three Talmidei Chachamim get the joke. Okay, so then that means that what the Gemara is doing is it's telling us that on the level of someone who understands at a glance all of what is involved in a statement, and you say something, but this happens, Marmish, to me. You say something which has in it 50 years worth of interrelated understandings in which a word is understood in a particular way, and the way you have to take into consideration every last element and how it fits. And some jerk comes along and makes his intelligent intellectual comment. You burst out laughing. It's utterly stupid. It's amazing how dumb people can be, and they really believe they understand things, and they're telling you. You see this all the time. I see it all the time. So there's nothing crazy about the Gemara if you understand that the Gemara is not meant to be taken seriously. What it's trying to do is to show you what was initially taken into consideration. Why was it funny? And everybody's made it that the entire daf is analyzing a joke. It's trying to explain why they were laughing, right? That's the pashtus of the sugya. Now, whenever you try to explain what is funny, that's a difficult thing to understand. Even if it's just a dumb joke. So the point of a Gemara that's trying to explain to you why something is funny is obviously going to be opening up the sugya in ways that are meant to open up your eyes to everything that goes into a simple comment about one halacha. Then I think that that's mamish the point of the Gemara, which is, and it's the only place that the Gemara does this that I know of. And therefore it becomes very, very powerful. Anyway, so now that we've gone through all of the different questions of what should have been included, and we had basically three different approaches to what it is that's going on over here in terms of the Tchum, so time am I. So why is ultimately the reason that we don't allow Bittul over here? If, in fact, I mean, now we understand that they had a good reason to laugh at him. So if they have a good reason to laugh at him, what's the answer to their question? It's not Rav Abba's approach. So what is the answer? Why is the issue over here not an issue of Isser? And Isser is Batal. You're talking about water and salt? I don't get it. Why would they not be Batal? Abaya says, you know what? You're right. 100% it should be Batal. Except that we have a special Gzera over here. Shema ta'aseh issa b'shutafut. What we're worried about is that in case you actually make a dough together with the other person, And then you think, well, last week I borrowed water and salt and I was allowed to carry it wherever I wanted. So this week that we made it together, and over there, if we made it together, obviously half of it is her tum and half of it is my tum. And you think that it's the same thing and you can go carry it wherever you want. And you can't because you're going to be limited by her tum. So we made a gzera that even where you have other ingredients, that you're not allowed to move it out of the tum. Rava says the point over here is that when you're talking about putting things in that are actually, he's not talking about the same thing Abaye's talking about, by the way. Abaye's talking about the water. Rava's talking about things that are put in to make it tavlin, we said, or melach. The reason those things are not bato is because they're made l'tayma. And there's a general halacha that iser is not bato, even if it's just pure iser, none of the things we were talking about, where something is noticeable. And where it's noticeable, so over here, obviously the salt is noticeable, the tavlin is noticeable. And because of that, it cannot be bato. And that's the real explanation. Rav Ashi, Omar, Rav Ashi says it's a very simple explanation, gentlemen. We never believe in bittul unless you need the bittul. And that's called Dover Sheyesh Lo Matirin, where you're able to get the benefit of eating something without needing to have bittul, then don't use the bittul. Eat it without the bittul. We've had this concept many times. So over here, Mishum Da'avi Dover Sheyesh Lo Matirin. I don't care, even if it's 1,000 times more. The bottom line is, if I'm not mevatel it, can I eat it? Of course. I can't eat it out of my tum, but I can eat it. And if I want to go out of the tum and I insist I have to eat it in that place, so wait till after Yontem, wait till a few hours and then eat it in that place. But you should now have all of these cheshbonos that I should use bittul in order to be matir something. Eat it beheter gomer. Just have a little patience. And therefore, it's not bato. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, the water, that should be bato. Understand, if the water is bato, so why wouldn't the salt be bato? Didn't we learn that Rabbi Yehuda himself says that mayim and melach are both bato? Whether you're talking about an isa, or you're talking about dough, or whether you're talking about a pot of food. Now, it's this part that this girsa includes, beferish, that he says, ben bisa, ben mikter, it's not so clear. But as we'll see, says the Gemara, no, it depends what kind of salt. Modern salt, which we call melach sedomis, which has the same very fine structure. Why do we say melach sedomis is very fine? Because that's why we need mayim achronim. Because even though we don't see any salt, what kind of salt? I have to wash my hand because maybe I have salt on my hand that will get into my eyes. But what kind of salt? I'm looking at my eye, I don't see any salt. So melach sedomis indeed becomes completely invisible. Fine crystals that then melt completely into water. Masha'enke melach istrokanis, maybe Rebarnea can tell us where istrokan is, but I'm assuming it was in his neighborhood somewhere. No? We found a place which is not Barnea's neighborhood?
Maybe he has Barnea on the rocks.
All right, so this melach is referring to melach istrokanis. That's like that rock salt, and it's very, very noticeable. And that is not considered to be bato. That's why he changes it. Now, the pashtus over here is that it was including either dough, because I don't usually add like tavlin in a dough. So apparently we're talking also about cooked things. So apparently, that's how Rashi explains this. Apparently, he doesn't have that gears. He said it beferish. So the question is that we have another brisa that says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, mayim u'melach is bato only in a dough, but they're not bato in a pot because, after all, you have the water and the rotav, the juice and the gravy, and that gravy shows the water very clearly. So why would the water be bato if I can see it? So how come in the Mishnah it was mashma even in a pot, or the way we quoted before, if we had that girsa, that he said beferish in the pot? Lokasha, the Mishnah is talking about a kugel kind of thing. So over there, once you get the kugel, that the kugel is called a kedera, but it no longer has any gravy in it. So that's talking about a thick thing that I do not see any water in it. Whereas the Braisa is talking about where there is a gravy or there's a juice on the bottom. And that I can see. So, okay. Whew. Anyway, quite a second. Yeah.
A few things. The art school brings in the Pashup Shat that it's Nechtsav, the Istrokis is Nechtsav Minakarka Bidei Adam, which I guess is the difference between extracting it from water as opposed to extracting it from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But in the notes, mm-hmm. he brings a Rashash that it's from Istrakhan, which is in southern Russia by the Volga. And he says, see the Aruch HaShalem.
Right. Is that like a Himalayan salt?
So it's the name of a place, like I assumed.
He stresses the Aruch. There was another sugya where Rebbe said, the Mefarshim said, this is the one time in Shas which shows you the level of thinking, because it seemed to be wasteful.
That was something else. That was Rashi and Yuma.
Right, I'm just saying this is a dogma to them.
Rashi and Yuma says that there's one place where the Gemara goes through the machine language of what's happening in your brain. So it goes through each step, even though it's utterly ridiculous, because obviously we understand that on our own. So Rashi says the Gemara wanted to show you the steps that your brain is making, even when you don't think about them. We have to go through these points, because otherwise you can end up getting confused. If you jump to conclusions, you don't understand what you took for granted. Yeah, that's a dogma. I see. It's a very nice dogma.
But it fits here with Beitza and Yuma. It fits here with Beitza because you're discussing the Rabbanan and the Xeris of the Rabbanan and how the Rabbanan are thinking. It fits that.
Yes, that fits here. That's a very beautiful point that Rabbanan is making. We found throughout this Masechet that the Masechet presents again and again the interrelationship of the various issues. We just had a couple of days ago where we were talking about in both directions, in opposite directions, the interrelationship of Shabbos and Yom Tov, Legabe both Kula and Chumrah, whether we should look at it in that direction, or the interrelationship between loss of money and the need to do a mitzvah, in terms of the relationship between the sugya of Mefanim in Shabbos and Meshilin in Beitza. And then we had throughout the Masechet beautiful, beautiful explanations of the Ikar Yesedas and the development of Teresh Baal Peh, and the way in which the Rabbanan are Gezer, and what kind of things you can be Gezer, and what the basis is of Ein Gezer and Gezer L'Gezer, all kinds of amazing, very fundamental issues that end up being defined in Masechet Beitza particularly. And obviously there's reasons for that, which we'll have to go into Bezrat Hashem, but we have an opportunity to go over the Masechet, see him maybe, and which is coming soon.